incredibly lucky I am to have such amazing conversations with guests. And you guys are lucky too, because I do the podcast. Today we get the opportunity to hear from Lena Sisko. She is a human intelligence expert, aka spy. I can't tell you how much fun we had. You are going to hear about balling up with Trust Comes Truth, how being nice to people is a good thing, like Martha Stewart used to say. Of course, we also talk fraud and pop culture. And after this episode, I think you may want to go to PsyCon 5i 2023 in Dallas in September. This is from the website. PsyCon 5i is a two-day exclusive educational and entertainment conference focused on bringing elite human intelligence, HUMINT, skills to business intelligence. Human intelligence, aka spies, will be so much fun to learn about. I am planning to attend. Let's get to the conversation. I'm so excited today. This is like a little bit of, spy envy. Can I call it spy envy, Lena?
Yes, you can call it that.
I've got some spy envy going on today. Okay, we have Lena Sisko here, and we're going to start with some word association, and then she can give you her spy story. Okay, so when you hear the word fraud, what do you think of?
Money.
Money. Oh, I like that. Okay, how about ethics?
Employees.
Okay, and then this is a new one because of your background. Do you have a favorite spy?
No, I don't.
No favorite spy?
No. Even I know people would assume I did, but I don't.
Okay. Well then, and follow up to that one. Yeah. Do you think one gender is better at spying than others?
I'm going to say yes. What the heck? I'm going out there. Yes.
And the gender is?
Female.
Yes. Okay. Okay. We rock. Okay.
Sorry, so, guys. Doesn't mean you can't be awesome, but I'll tell you why.
Okay. So Lena, why don't you give your sort of elevator speech and tell us why you think women make better spies?
Oh, all right. So elevator speech, former Navy interrogator and intelligence officer. I was a former archaeologist, loved to dig up the past, put it together. And then I joined the military because I didn't have a job for money. And instead of being Indiana Jones, wanted to be James Bond. But I went into intelligence. I loved it. And this opportunity fell into my lap to become an interrogator and be trained by the Marines. And at first I said no, but then I said, what the heck? It's a challenge. Let me do it. If I fail, I fail and I'll be okay with it. I ended up loving it. And that was in 1999. And of course, there were no wars going on. I didn't do anything with it. And 9/11 happened in 2001. I got a phone call. While I was in what we call knife and fork school. So I just got commissioned to an officer and I was in my ethics class, believe it or not. And it was ethics and what was the other word? It's mannerisms, you know, like how to do a dining in and a dining out. And I'll never forget this day with Miss Yonke. We're writing, she's talking about writing thank you cards and all this etiquette. And I was on a break and I saw the planes of the Twin Towers. And a few minutes later, I got a phone call saying, hey, pack your bags. You're going to war. Fast forward, I end up in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba as an interrogator. No idea how I got there. And fast forward to today, it's the best decision I ever made. I am very in tune with people and I love to create a safe environment and make people feel comfortable to be open and honest and to give me the critical information I need to make very important decisions. So yes, I used it as a military intelligence officer and interrogator, but I take those skills and I teach the private sector all those skills so they can make very informed decisions in their lives, no matter if they want to use it personally or professionally.
I love that. I love that. And I was watching your TEDx talk in Wilmington. And one of the things you start right off is just be nice to people. Is that so hard?
Apparently it is. I don't know why, but listen, there's a chapter in my newest book called Honest Answers. And the chapter one, why the nice guy always wins. You have to be the nice guy. But let me caveat that. Being nice does not mean being weak. And I love my husband saying, he's a colonel in the Marine Corps. He says, don't mistake my kindness for weakness, because that's not what it's about. Being kind and being empathetic and respecting people is not weak. In fact, it's super powerful. And in order to do that, people have to have confidence. They have to suspend their ego, and they have to really be genuine in order, again, for the end result is to acquire truthful information.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like smiling.
Yeah. Smiling is infectious. If I smile, you smile right back. You don't know why, but you do it. It's mirror neurons.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just so funny that you took etiquette courses. So I have a friend's son who I think should be a spy. Oh, absolutely. He should be a spy.
Why?
And because he can fit into any situation.
Oh, very good.
Any situation. But he's also a little bit anonymous.
Mm-hmm. That's even better.
Yeah. So I was going to, and then I worked with a guy who was, I think he was like 6'5 or 6'6, and he wanted to get into the CIA. And they're like, you stand out.
Stand out. Like literally stand out.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. When you're a spy, it's all about being the gray person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask this. Okay. We're older. Like we're not at the beginning of our career.
No.
Like do people think that spies are old?
I think the perception is that they are old. Because you look at James Bond, every James Bond character is older. And in order to get to that level of spy, you have to have a lot of life experiences. The agencies that are going to hire you to be a spy are not going to hire you right out of college and send you out on the street. Now, they'll hire you. They'll put you through an intern program and they'll prep you and train you. But no active spy just pops out of college. It's not going to happen. You need life experiences, because when you're overseas or even when you're stateside, you're going to be met with a lot of challenging issues and a lot of challenging, even life challenges. And you have to navigate those effortlessly and then conduct what you have to do, your mission. So that takes a lot of life skills. And then, of course, all the skills you're going to learn for tradecraft and technique and tools and all that fun stuff.
Well, yeah. And like you said, etiquette, like you can't put this persona out that you're, say, a wealthy money launderer if you literally, you know, can't eat properly.
Exactly. Exactly. You cannot walk into an embassy cocktail hour if you don't know the levels of martinis or how they're made or how to order one of those more sophisticated drinks and then drink it without getting drunk.
Ooh, how do you do that?
Yeah, you don't drink it. You sip it, sip water, sip it, sip water. Water to drink ratio is, you know, water 10, drink one.
Oh my God. Now you have been kind of all over the news lately because of Alex Murdaugh, as I call it, hashtag Seawall, criminal with a law license. And I was watching one of your most recent videos, and everyone, I'm going to have lots of show notes because Lena is great about putting videos up, and they're like very succinct, but you get so much. So balling up, I really liked balling up. So explain to the audience what balling up is and like how you saw it with Alex Murdaugh.
Okay. Balling up is when your body concaves, right? It kind of leans forward. So what happens is we're going to lean forward. We're going to dip our head. So our chin's going to tuck in to our neck. Our shoulders are going to curl forward. Our eyes are going to avert down. And it's almost like we're tucking in to do into a ball, like to do a somersault, but we're sitting or we're standing. The reason why the body closes up like that and goes concave is because it's going into protection mode. But the question we have to ask ourselves is, why does this person feel they have to protect themselves? Now, it could be a lot of reasons. And because we're not mind readers, that's the conversation we have to have with people. But then you consider the context. So when you looked at Alec on stand, or even when he was sitting with his lawyers listening to witnesses testify, he had this concave posture. That tells me he's going into protect mode, because if you pay attention to what people are saying, They're saying incriminating stuff against him. So, of course, it makes sense he's going to want to protect himself and his story against this incriminating evidence. And he becomes smaller. It also tells me he's not confident. He's not confident in the story that he's pitching. Oh, and that changed. That's another story. He's not confident in his testimony because I can tell by that body posture. And every time someone took the stand and said something incriminating, he got smaller and tighter.
That's so fascinating. And you said this, the context, but also the words.
Yes. So context,
there's a lot of people out there who are like nonverbal experts.
Yep.
But the statement analysis.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to back up for a moment. When you see somebody balling up, okay, whether it's a friend or a colleague, don't automatically assume they're going in protect mode. Let me just put that warning sign out there. Because if you haven't baselined their body language and their gestures and their behaviors, which is their words too, right? If you haven't baselined their normal behavior, and by normal, I mean relaxed. If you don't know the context of the situation in which you are seeing them balling up, you can't jump the gun and make the conclusion, oh, they're balling up into protect mode, because sometimes that person could have a stomach ache and start concaving. I know when I don't feel good, I ball up into protection mode because I don't feel good. So just know you need to know the context of the situation. Now, back to words. There are a lot of people who claim to be body language experts. That's great. But in my opinion, you cannot be just that. You cannot be a body language expert unless you are an expert in human behavior, unless you are an expert in statement analysis, which is the words that people use to communicate. It's one of my pet peeves when people say, oh, communication is 93% nonverbal. No, it's not. It's insane to think that. There was a study done back in 1971, Dr. Albert Mehrabian, University of Psychology, University in California. He conducted a study, published a book called Silent Messages, and said that. But he also said this, hey, everyone, this percentage was just for my one experiment. This is not in any way, shape, and form supposed to be encompassing for all communication, just my one experiment. But for some reason, that got lost, right? And people want to say, oh, it's all about body language, and I don't even have to listen to you. I can just watch you. Oh, please don't do that, because you are going to get the wrong message and you're going to make a really critical decision on false information, and it's going to hurt you. So when going back to the balling up, I look at Alec, I see the balling up. I see it as he's listening to the words of somebody testifying. In particular, it was his son, his late son, Paul's friend, Rogan, who was testifying that he heard Alec's voice on the phone right there at the kennels. And of course, that goes against Alec's cover story, right? That goes against what he was saying. As he was listening to Rogan say this, his hands got tighter. His arms came in closer, his shoulders curled in more, and he almost froze with fear. Now, I have the words, right, incriminating against Alec. I have the context of the situation, and I'm observing the body language. That gives me the whole picture. On the opposite side, you also have to pay attention to the words that people are saying if they're balling up. So when Alec was talking about on the stand and he has all this emotion with all the mucus coming out of his nose and the, you know, it was disgusting. But anyway, all that going on, and he's doing non-contracted denials. I did not kill my wife or my son, which was convincing. And he's nodding yes. He was balled up. Okay. So now I have a cluster of behavioral indicators. I have a non-contracted denial, which is a convincing technique of liars. Not everyone, but a lot of people. I have the balled up. I have a lot of emotion. I also have the tight, like, hand grip. So we have the context of the situation. I have the words that he's saying, and I have his body language. When you put all that together, now I can say he was probably balling up because he was going into protect mode because he was hiding the real truth.
Yeah, it's
a lot going on.
Exactly. A lot going on. And we had a pre-call last week, and we were talking about a thing I just saw. And I said that this person did not move for 8 hours. And you called that frozen body.
Yes. Yes. So way back in, so a lot of people think, oh, if they're lying, they become fidgety. Okay. Some people do, but not everyone. And there are some people who freeze with fear and they will not move. Listen, we're humans. We talk with our hands. It's natural. We make facial expressions. We lift our eyebrows. We smile. We frown. We move. We shift. That's normal. That's what we do. To sit in the same position without moving is not normal. So if it's not natural and normal, again, the question I ask myself is when I'm doing these assessments, why? Why are they refusing to move? Why are they controlling their body movements and gestures so much that it's unnatural? Well, it's probably because they don't feel relaxed and comfortable. So the second question, why don't they feel relaxed and comfortable? Maybe because they're hiding the truth.
Yeah. Oh my God. So much so. do you have a favorite instructor of all the training you've been through? Is there one person that stood out to you?
Yes. Janine Driver.
Oh, absolutely. Tell me about her.
And she was late in life. So, you know, I went through all this training. I was called a body language expert before I saw out Janine. And years ago, gosh, I can't even remember, 2016, 15. It was a long time ago. I sought out Janine and I was like, Janine, I want to study under you. And so I signed up and I went to DC for a week and took her course. And it cost me a chunk of money, but I didn't care because I loved her style. I liked what she was putting out. I was like, I want to be trained by her. And I sat in that class and it wasn't so much that I learned all these new techniques on statement analysis and detecting deception. I had that background, but I learned something much more important. And that was how to public speak. How to deliver my message, how to choose my words and craft, how to build a course, how to communicate to people, how to teach people better. And that was invaluable. And she really became my mentor and was the one who got me into keynote speaking, what I do today. And it just went off from there.
Well, yeah, because you could stay in, you know, the government and affect, you know, one-offs, one at a time, or you could go and get your message out. And I had just been interviewed for a podcast and it's like, I could do one-off investigations, or I could go out and teach and train and hit 100, 200, 500 people at a time. And I see you glowing doing that.
Yeah. I love doing that. There's a couple of things that now, as I get older, I really have come to love. I do love the one-on-one. I offer, I call it a professional mentor program, PMP. And I work with my clients either 3 months to meet an objective. They want to get a new client. They want to get a raise. They want to get whatever they want. I work with them with that. They want to, you know, perfect their way of giving feedback to their employees, whatever it is, 6 months or a year. I have clients that stay on. They finish the year. You're like, nope, I need you. I need you for the next year. I'm like, okay, you got it. And I get the feedback I get from them of how the mentor program has literally transformed their life. I've had clients who've been at rock bottom's basement. And now they're racking in money and, you know, have successful businesses, not just here in this country. And it's just brilliant. I love that. Then I also love to get in front of those big crowds. And then I can get 500 people, 1,000 people listening to my same message, and they could go use it that night. I'm like, listen, after you leave me, go practice what I just told you. You can start using it today. And then when I get off the stage, I'm usually getting that feedback too. Like, I never thought about this. I never thought I could do that. So that makes me feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some myths people have about spies?
Oh my gosh. Well, let me see. There's one myth that's actually true. It's called the honeypot, and which goes back to that question that you asked me earlier about which gender is better. The reason why I said females is because we are unsuspecting. Nobody assumes we're up to anything. And that's just the way it is. Now, you get a 6'4" guy walking in, you know, physically fit, the shaved haircut, the military type, you know, type style haircut, wearing the Oakley glasses, dressed in a nice tailored suit. He looks suspicious. You know, he's up to something. He's out to schmooze me. He's out to win me. He's up to something. He's trained. He has etiquette, right? He's got the skills. He's got class. There's something up there. But then you have a female walk in, and no matter what she's dressed like, and all people just look and they don't think that she could have the training, could have the expertise, is up to anything, because females were trustworthy. Now, some people listening to this are going to be like, oh my God, that's not the case. But way back in the day, how spies started off was the honeypot. A very attractive female goes after a soldier. And then the rest is history. Later on that night, she collects her information. It's the oldest trick in the book, and it still works today. And so that, and so people use it. But the other thing with the female brain, and this is another myth. Yes, men and females can be amazing at this craft. Absolutely. But here's the myth that I'm going to bust as truth. The female brain has 14 areas in our brain that are meant to take in all these nonverbals and process that type of information. Men have half. I don't know why, but it is proven scientifically. We just have more areas in the brain that we tap into to analyze those nonverbals, to increase our personal relationships. And so that's why it may be easier for us to be unassuming, to work more on that rapport and naturally be more empathetic. Whereas men may have to work a little harder. Doesn't mean they can't be amazing at it. So that is one thing. Other than that, I think becoming a spy, you have to be the gray person. You cannot stand out. You cannot want to be the center of attention. You cannot be all over social media. And you have to be very okay with that quiet lifestyle. You're going to be put in dangerous situations, and you have to be able to operate on your own. You will get tasked to do things and go places by yourself for months at a time and have to be okay with that. You may not be able to contact your family for months at a time. And you have to be okay with that as well.
Yeah. So I got to go because I do a class called Fraud and Pop Culture. And there's so much pop culture with spies. So this is going to be kind of like a lightning round too. What do you think of the Americans?
Oh, okay. So I am actually friends with Jack. I'm going to murder his last name. He is a German who came to the United States as a Russian who lived here as a spy. He's amazing. The Americans is pretty legit. Now, there are some scenes that are obviously very Hollywood. All right. Even interrogation scenes are all Hollywood. But the premise behind it, is pretty legit.
Okay. Okay. How about Homeland?
You know, I haven't watched it, but again, there's some elements that yes, but Hollywood just pumps it out of the water. We don't have the technology that they claim we do in Homeland and in the Americans. I mean, come on, really? They boast this tech. I'm like, what do you think we are in the Jetsons age? No, we're not there yet. They do more harsh techniques. Everybody's like getting tortured. No, that does not happen. It just doesn't happen. If anything, if you get caught, you may go to prison, but there's going to be like a political swap. You know, that stuff's just not going to happen. So that's the Hollywood part.
What shows or movies do you like that you think do a good depiction of sort of that world?
It's such a tough question because really none of them do. They don't. They're Hollywood. And great, because, you know, Hollywood is meant to entertain and sell and make money off movies. And they can't do that with being the boring lifestyle. You know, even when I was an archaeologist, I became one. I thought it was going to be just like the Temple of Doom. Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom. Yeah, no. It was a lot of geometry, a lot of hot days, a lot of being stuck on a mountaintop with no bathroom. That's what archaeology is. It's dirty and boring, and I loved it. But Spy World is lonely. It's scary, And it really is not the James Bond that you see in Hollywood movies. You don't get an Aston Martin. You're not getting the super, all these super gadgets. You may get some super cool gadgets. I have seen them, but it's not James Bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a career. Like literally it's, you know, it's work.
Have you been doing a gig for, say, a corporation and someone comes up to you or you meet someone from the gig and you're like, oh, they should become a spy? You ever had that where you're like, they follow up, you just like you can, you can maybe point to some people that you're like, they would be good. So like my friend's son, he should do it, even though I don't want him to, but honestly, he, out of every one of my kids' friends, he is the one.
Really? You know, I will look at people and say, hey, they are really receptive on picking up on human behavior and that rapport, and they present themselves really good and confident and they're eloquent. But to be a spy, oof, it's difficult because I'm been in that world. So I know what it takes and it's a lot. And to make that assessment on a first meet, can't do it. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I know. Yeah. And just think about it. When you go, if anybody is interested in joining an agency and taking this as a career field, you're going to be put through a lot of training before you even get to say that word. Yeah. The vetting process is huge.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, we see like the Bourne Identity, which I love.
Yeah, I did. They're good. Yes,
and
I love
you
them.
You see all the passports and you see all the money. And it's like, my fascination is like, I mean, I did undercover work and every freaking nickel had to be accounted for. And I see those sort of things and I'm like, oh, that would never work. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. You're right. You're absolutely right. The paper trail and the amount of work that has to go into all those operations is gruesome. That's why I'm like, don't want it.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Too much.
Yeah. So another thing is like, we want to get honest answers out of people. We don't want them to say what we want them to say. So how do you, you know, not in the whole false confession, but like, how do you sit there and make it okay for them to give you the honest answer? What is your, besides the rapport and everything, but like, I have had a boss that was like, just pound it. And I'm like, that's not my style.
Yeah, no, don't judge people. Don't blame people. But I would say at the top, don't be a judger. You can't judge people. As humans, we shouldn't be doing that anyway. But listen, actively listen. Don't pretend you're listening. People know that. Actively listen and express empathy. Don't pretend to be sincere and try to understand their point of view. You have to really have got to want to express that empathy. So non-judgmental, trying to understand as best you possibly can their viewpoint, why they made the decision they did, and then just tell them, listen, I'm here to listen. I need the information. I'm here to listen without judgment. That's not my job, is to judge you. Somebody else can do that, but I don't do that. I want honest information and then the reciprocity. If I'm open and honest with you, you're open and honest with me. But if I'm not, and I give off creepy vibes that I'm hiding something, that I'm up to something, that I'm tricking you, you are not going to trust me. So I tell everybody, and I mentioned this a million times in that book, with trust comes truth. How are you going to earn their trust? And it's not an ingredient. It literally is a recipe of many different things that you have to be self-aware of and, of course, situationally aware of them in order to create that trusting environment.
Oh, my God. I love with trust comes truth.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah. That just basic. But yeah. So what do you do when you come across someone that maybe you know in advance? Maybe they've already been diagnosed as like a psychopath or a narcissist. Do you change it up at all? If you go in and you know this, how do you change it up, if at all?
it makes it very difficult because I won't talk to a sociopath, a psychopath, because they need to be with somebody that has a clinical degree in the background. If I am with a narcissist, now there's the clinical definition of a narcissist and they're rare. Like it is really rare to meet a sociopath, psychopath, pathological liar, and a narcissist. They're rare. I'm not saying you can't meet them, but they're very rare. But if I am interviewing or talking with someone with narcissistic tendencies, then I'm going to feed their ego because that's what they like. And if I sincerely, right, not over embellish it, but if I sincerely feed their ego and flatter them and compliment them enough, then they will keep boasting about what they know. And if they're boasting about what they know, they're giving me information.
Oh, I love that. That's yeah. Do you think that Bernie Madoff was a narcissist?
Oh, now I don't know. And I hate to judge it because, again, I don't have that clinical psychology background to make that judgment call. But I will tell you what I do know. And there's two types of liars out there. There's regular and powerful. And the regular liars like you and I, we don't like to lie because it conjures up all these negative emotions. We feel guilty. We're constantly thinking about worrying about getting caught and worrying about keeping up the lie. And that creates the negative emotions, which induces cortisol release. And we have those physiological responses to stress. We don't feel good. The powerful liar is not a good liar, but their thoughts are different. Their thoughts go to, ooh, I'm going to get money for my lie. Ooh, I'm going to stay out of jail for my lie. Ooh, I'm going to hurt that person that hurt me because of my lie. And so their thoughts aren't, I'm going to get caught. How do I keep it up? It's, I'm going to get rewarded. I'm going to stay out of jail. I'm going to get money. That suppresses cortisol, increases dopamine, and they come across as very calm, cool, collected. That's how some liars pass a polygraph because they don't have any physiological responses to stress. So they look confident, they sound confident, and there's no stress going on. One of the greatest spies of our nation, Aldrich Ames, he took a polygraph test for years and years while he worked for CIA and spied, right? Because in his motivation wasn't money. He was getting money, but his motivation became, I'm so good. I work for the top spy agency of this country, and I have them fooled. I'm so good. I call it the God complex. So now you look at Bernie Madoff. I'm so good. Nobody knows what I'm doing. And that's how you have this demeanor that shows confidence and trust. And then people start trusting him. People are like, oh, he's confident. I should trust him. And there you have it.
Well, and people, and this comes from Danny Kahneman, System 1 and System 2, we like action.
Yes.
Like we like it when people are strong and take action, and that's the less ethical thinking. It's quicker. And it's, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Our brain doesn't want to hang around and wait for stuff. Our brain wants information right here, right now. And so if people are going to give it to us, oh yeah, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to like you. I'm going to listen to you.
Yeah, especially in politicians, mm-hmm. You know? I mean, I'm going to say, and because he's on hospice, that like Jimmy Carter was, you know, he wasn't prone to action. He was prone to thought.
Yeah.
Yep. And people didn't like that. They wanted action.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that, regular and powerful liars. And I'm going to say I've made a mistake in the past by calling people narcissists when I should say they just have narcissistic tendencies.
Yeah. So that's what I'm. You're welcome.
Yeah. Because I don't really want to think that we live in a world of a lot of narcissists, but there are people with tendencies to. Yep. Yeah.
So absolutely.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is so incredibly good. So what haven't I asked you that you want to get out to the audience?
Well, you know what? I'll plug a little event that I'm hosting. Yes. It's a big event. It's happening in Dallas, September 14th and 15th. This is a Thursday, Friday. And it is called PsyCon 5i Experience, we call it. So I own the Congruency Group, and I started Sector Intelligence a few years ago. And Sector Intelligence primarily takes the spy tradecraft of elicitation and we teach it to private sector. A lot of sales love this. And we offer a couple of deeper level training with that. But this conference, we decided to host a human intelligence conference for business intelligence, for corporate intelligence. And no matter what you do, we're going to have keynote speakers. Janine Driver will be our celebrity keynote speaker. We're going to have courses and classes on body language, on detecting deception, on mastering conversations to get the truth and creating these trusting environments. We're going to have a spy game. Literally a spy game. I can't wait. We have a former CIA agent hosting the whole thing. We're going to have our 007 martini meet and greet. Lot of fun stuff. So I like to say it's educational and it's entertaining. And it's pretty darn cool. And you get to meet authors. We're going to have all our authors there. And if you want to find out more information, you can just go to sectorintel.com and it's on there.
And I'll put it all in the show notes. I looked at it today and it was like, and I reached out and made a couple of connections of the people that you highlighted. Yeah. And how fun.
Like, yeah, it's going to be fun. It'll be a fun event.
And I'm going to say for broad professionals, this would be a great event to attend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, it will. Yep. Yeah. Because you're going to learn the art of elicitation. Literally one of the breakout sessions will be on that. We're going to have a former MI6 talking about, and he was a legit spy. He's all over. He's a TV personality, published author. We're going to have a former FBI agent. He recruited spies. He's going to tell you how to win trust and identify those deceptive behaviors, which is critical for fraud in investigations. And of course, you know, knowing when it's happening.
When you've had someone that has confessed to you, mm-hmm. do you see their sense of relief, their physical sense of relief most times?
Yes.
And how do they present?
Oh gosh, their whole body drops. Yeah. The shoulders drop. They slash back. It's almost like, oh, I'm done with this workout. Yeah, it's powerful. Very powerful. And I have had people thank me for, there's one guy I'll never forget. He's like, you know, I just want to thank you. You felt like my therapist. I feel so good now that I told you this lie. I was like, you're welcome.
When I was with customs, I was able to observe a polygraph. I was literally in a closet in on top of boxes.
Oh my gosh.
The window. And the polygrapher told me, he goes, it's coming. And when I saw him in his body, it was so, there was no way you could mistake it. And at the same thing, he absolutely thanked the polygrapher because it had been, he'd been living a lie.
Yeah. It's exhaustive. It's painful. It's a lot going on. And so what I tell people in all my training that I do, I still train law enforcement and special forces and private sector. I'm like, listen, when you create the environment that it's okay to tell the truth, no matter how incriminating, no matter how embarrassing, when you create that environment, people will tell you the truth and they will thank you for not judging them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Lena, this is so good. I'm checking my calendar to see if I can go.
Oh my God, you have to go. And I'm getting information because I have the block of rooms that are discounted. So let me know.
Okay, because it would be so much fun. And the guy that I was the guest on the podcast, he's like, where do you get your training from? And I'm like, all over.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's not always about Excel and pivot tables and like, and realistically, as my little fraud therapy goes, this stuff is even more valuable. I can give the accountants the, you know, company books, but this stuff is even more valuable. So, oh my gosh, I cannot wait. We're going to have you back.
I love it. Yay.
We're going to have you back. Maybe we can do a podcast at the conference. That would be
Oh, we definitely can. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we absolutely can. Because I tell you, the event, the venue is gorgeous. It is. Yeah, it's amazing. And there's a lot of places we can do it. Tons of stuff.
This is the final thing. I promise the final thing. We talked last week and I suggested to Lena that she needs to start building up her content on Sam Bankman-Fried.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yes. For a couple of reasons. First off, he's younger.
Yep.
And then he's got two lawyers for parents. And the notoriety, I think it's going to be really interesting on a bunch of different levels. One of it is being that he's younger.
Yeah.
And allegedly committed this huge of fraud. So you guys look forward to Lena to be posting lots of things about SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried, because I think she is the perfect person to like observe him going forward with what he said in the past. So I look forward to that, Lena. And thank you so, so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for the challenge. I accept the challenge and you will see postings on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Awesome or what? Again, I can't believe what an honor and pleasure it is to have guests like Lena. Now, I have a favor to ask you. No, it's not giving Frothish a review, but of course, who doesn't love reviews as long as they're good or helpful? Do you even listen to the outro? It takes a bit more work and I'm not sure anyone listens. Please let me know or we can just end with some fun music. Have a great week. I have some work travel coming up and I can't wait to be back on stage spreading the word on fraud, ethics, pop culture, and current fraud stories. Reach out to someone, show them you care.